starting now. So I just really want to welcome every one of you to the Mega C-Suite series. This is brought to you by Cyber Risk Meetup, and I'm the founder of Cyber Risk Meetup. My name is Charmaine Tan, so I'm your host for today. And actually, we have a lot of special guests as well. For those who are joining us for the very first time, just want to extend a big welcome to all of you. And a quick introduction to Cyber Risk Meetups. We are actually a community across Australia, Singapore, and Japan as well. And we are more than about 3,000 members that will meet regularly before the COVID situation, actually. But now we have moved virtually and we are tuning in live now for all this Mega C-Suite series. So we have actually run a couple of episodes already with different C-executives guests. The first one with a US government CISO. And then after that, subsequently, we have a chief financial officer, a chief risk officer from Australia. And today we have a very special edition, which is the Asia Pacific edition. So before I get to that, also, just to let you know, Cyber Risk Meetup is across six different cities at the moment. So we are in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Perth, Singapore, Tokyo. I don't think I've missed out anyone else, and that's pretty much it. But we have lots of new friends joining us from around the world, from the US as well, and various parts of Asia Pacific. So today we have about more than 140 people joining us, so that's really great. All right, so with that, I have my special co-host with me here today, Stephen Lee. Can you give us a wave? So Stephen runs the chapter, the Cyber Risk Meetup chapter for Tokyo. And we have also got other very, very exciting speakers, which we'll get to them in a bit. So just quick one. So these are the different episodes that we have actually had over the last few weeks. And you can actually catch up to it on the Cyber Risk Meetup channel on YouTube. So just search Cyber Risk Meetup on YouTube, subscribe to that, and you can catch up on the episodes. In fact, today's one, we will also try to put that up. So if you have friends who have missed it and they want to get their hands on it, they know where to get it. All right, so Stephen, without further ado, do you want to introduce our guest speakers?
Sure, thanks Charmaine for the warm welcome, and I'm delighted to present our two guest speakers for today. So Magda Shelley is the co-founder and cybersecurity co-founder of the cybersecurity marketplace Responsible Cyber. She spends most of her time supporting CISOs in their cybersecurity strategy and roadmaps. She was also nominated as a Global Leader of the Year at the Top 50 Cybersecurity Influencer. She's based in Singapore, and welcome to the show, Magda.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Welcome, everyone. Thank you. I'm very happy to be here today.
I'm also honored to welcome Mihoko Matsubara. She's the Chief Cybersecurity Strategist. Hello, Miho. At NTT Corporation Tokyo. She's responsible for cybersecurity thought leadership. She started her career working at the Japanese Ministry of Defense and has recently published a book in cybersecurity in Japanese. She is a highly sought after speaker, speaking internationally at conferences such as the RSA conference in 2018 and 19 in San Francisco and the EU Cyber Forum 2019 in Brussels. Welcome to the show, Miho.
Thank you for having me.
So I'd like to start off with our first question. So Miho, the current pandemic has seen cyber criminals, including state-sponsored attackers, launching COVID-19 related phishing and emotet malware attacks. Now, what are some of the key attack patterns that you've been seeing in the APAC region?
So we've seen both cyber crimes and state-sponsored cyber attacks in the Asia-Pacific region, just like the rest of the world. And both cyber criminals and state-sponsored hackers are taking advantage of people's fear and concerns over the coronavirus outbreak and our sudden shift to remote work, because we've been struggling to catch up with, to have sufficient cybersecurity for working from home environment. And because everybody is now keen to learn about the latest news on the pandemic, the click ratio on those phishing emails has risen actually from less than 5% to over 40%, so skyrocketed before and after the coronavirus outbreak. So it's easier for hackers, both from the criminal group and state-sponsored non-hacker groups, to take advantage of people's fear to lure people to click on phishing emails, and also to try to download fake apps. For example, some countries started to introduce contact tracing app in different countries, and there are already fake tracing apps, such as in India. And there are also some fake Zoom or Skype meeting invitations. And what I haven't seen so far from the Asia Pacific region, at least from open sources, the ransomware attacks on medical institutions, because we have already seen such dreadful cyber attacks from Europe and the United States. But I still think that medical institutions in the Asia Pacific region still should watch out that such cyber attacks using ransomware.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, if there's one thing that we've noticed throughout this experience is that just because you have a noble cause or you're trying to help people doesn't mean that you're excluded from the hackers attack list. So any thoughts there, Magda?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a very good point. What we have seen, and like Miho said, there is a shift also from the cyber criminals using the emotional, you know, current state of individuals across the world and trying to play on the fear by targeting, you know, individuals with COVID-19 themed phishing emails, malware, malicious software. And this is growing, and we see it independently of which region we are in. A very good point that you mentioned is if you're doing good, are you actually excluded? Obviously, you're not. You're the same target as anyone else. Or I would say, actually, you are even easier target because you think that way. Mm-hmm. And there is this problem that is very popular across the industries, across countries. I would say Asia is in particular as well, Asia Pacific is in particular concern, is thinking that it's not a shared responsibility keeping security. A shared responsibility doesn't mean that, you know, the service provider or any software or any technology that you're using will be secured by default. It's not the case, and we security professionals know that. However, reality is that our clients, our organizations, other people from the public do not have that level of knowledge, and they suppose that because they're using a big brand or because they're using a certain software that has been downloaded 5,000 times, we come back on the application, mobile applications, is that those must be secured because everyone else is using them. It's not the case. And this is where it's really important, especially nowadays, to raise awareness around this general increase in COVID-19 themed attacks, no matter if they're phishing, malware, or mobile applications that are actually not legitimate. The contact tracing application is only one example. Depending on the country and what they are launching, we can expect that cyber criminals will mirror that with a malicious one. And this is what happens. And here I would like to add is, you know, we see increased number of initiatives to help within the pandemic, either by creating new websites or either by creating, you know, help in general, like non-profit, you know, aid for all those people in struggling currently. The same comes, and I had a very interesting discussion with the registrar. They have seen an increased number of domains, including coronavirus or COVID-19, that have been registered. And now the question is, how do you assess which one is legitimate and which one is actually for malicious intention? So again, the overall threat landscape is changing with the focus on, okay, we have a possibility here to attack institutions and individuals differently because currently they are focused on fear and panic and they need hope. So it's actually nothing else than criminals taking technology, using the current moment as an opportunity to increase their attacks. And by criminals, I would like to add one point as a closing answer to this question. And this is coming from a friend, an acquaintance of mine who was a policeman. And he mentioned something that's very relevant. Not only normal individuals, when I say normal, means not criminals, are in lockdown. Criminals are in lockdown as well. So what will they do? They will use technology to perform attacks. And therefore, we expect as well that the attacks are or will increase.
That's a very interesting point. I didn't think of it that way. And it's really true because, like, you know, as part of my hobby, I would say I like to monitor, you know, the OSINT open source intelligence news around the world. And it's very interesting to see the trends as well. And it has changed and evolved over the years. And these days, there's so many different forms of attacks that's all very heavily focused, you know, on the pandemic situation. And, you know, attackers are taking advantage of that. So all the more, we really need to be more aware in this. And there's so much debate going on, even with the contact tracing app, right? Like there's a lot of talks about even privacy and security, and we can get to that in a little bit on. But I want to shift now the question a bit to people who are, you know, maybe they're going through a period of time of learning how to be more competitive in their career when it comes to having a career in cybersecurity, right? And given that we are in the new norm, I know this is a word that's been used many times, we're in the new norm these days. So what kind of specific career advice that both of you can actually give to our cybersecurity listeners that will enable them to still remain competitive in today's world? Maybe we'll start off first with Miho.
So stay competitive. I think that cybersecurity skill sets for remote work is definitely appreciated and needed, because companies and employees will need to stay flexible between going back to office and going back to remote work for a while, not since we never know when we can totally overcome this coronavirus pandemic. So it means that the companies and employees really need to rethink about what to do with cybersecurity to cover all the elements of cybersecurity to cover their work. Because, well, some of the companies already did some remote work before this pandemic, but most of the companies did this large scale of remote work for the first time.
Yes.
And for instance, in Japan, 70% of Japanese remote workers work from home for the first time in their life. So they are not familiar with cybersecurity to cover what to do with cybersecurity hygiene or cybersecurity for their remote work IT environment. So, and the scary thing about this pandemic is because they have definitely lots of turn down on the economic impact. And actually, the Barracuda networks now have published their recent survey reports that 40% of companies in the world actually have cut their cybersecurity budget. So it means that cybersecurity professionals can offer cybersecurity services, products, and also best practices advice for different levels of awareness, audience and customers, and at different level of cybersecurity budget, then definitely they can stay in competitive in this really challenging environment.
Thanks for that, Miho. Very interesting stats as well. What's your take, Magda?
I would actually, you know, like to jump on the last point of Miho, which relates to the fact that companies have decreased or even cut the cybersecurity budget, which is what is happening. And from one research that I have been reading recently, it actually is interesting to see that the chief information security officer is expecting much more freebies, even around security, and especially from cybersecurity startups nowadays. What does it mean? It does mean that there is, unfortunately, a lack of understanding from those companies or the top management, the board of directors, that by going remote, it doesn't reduce their risk. They actually increase their attack surface, and therefore they're exposing themselves to additional risk. So they need to enhance their security. But that's why, in my opinion, we have seen a shift from, you know, a slower business to a very higher intake and on demand currently. But let's come back to the question. which I'm going to take from a different perspective. It's about how do you stay competitive as a cybersecurity professional. I would say that we have seen, at least I have seen, a very, I would say one of the biggest mistakes by chief information security officers or by security professionals being or working with companies, big brands for a long time. Building their brand by being completely associated with that big brand. Well, when there is a crisis or a major disruption, they might lose their position. And that actually dissociates them from that brand, and they find themselves without a personal brand in their particular expertise. And when that happens and they do not have a personal brand that identify them as a professional cybersecurity expert in that domain, because they all their life for 20 or 30 years, they have been associated with just their company's brand, then they are not competitive. So my advice to the industry folks, especially the ones who keep their like digital identity very, almost I want to say invisible, well, that doesn't help you, because if you are working for a company, you might as well take in consideration the real risk, which is the traditional risk of losing your position, especially with a major disruption like a pandemic. And therefore, you need to ensure that you have a backup plan or you have a personal brand that can make you really being and having that advantage over thousands or thousands of other profiles across. So being speaking in conferences is very important, but as well proving into some scientific research or expertise or publishing some really interesting research papers or articles could be something that doesn't impact that much your digital, and because I'm aware about the sensitivity when it comes to digital and online presence. Not everyone likes to post webinars and videos when they are working, especially in cybersecurity like I do. So therefore, try to find other channels where you can actually write and showcase your deep expertise in your domain. That's the only way. Dissociate yourself. You have your personal brand and you have your corporate brand. They are two different things, and you should actually build your own one continuously.
I really love that, Magda, because that's very practical advice as well. And that's also bearing in mind the context of the nature of the people that is in this industry, right? They all love being covert, you know, hiding behind the screens and things like that. But at the same time, it is really true, because, you know, you need to make sure that your work is known. And also, like, there's a lot of even the tech for the tech people, like capture the flag exercises, you know, just participating in hackathons. It's all part of contributing back to the ecosystem at the same time. And it's like everyone, every individual is so important. So it's something that, you know, we shouldn't be discrediting ourselves, but being mindful of that. And I like what you shared, you know, putting on the risk lens on your own role, and also having a look at your role in the company and also in the entire industry as a whole. So that's really good. Actually, that brings us very nicely to Steve's question.
Yeah, so I think there's some good topics in here. And, you know, you talk about the paradox where there's less budget for cybersecurity, and you also have more demand for cybersecurity professionals. From memory, in APAC, there's a shortage of about 2.6 million professionals alone this year. What are some ways that we can overcome this issue and bring more diversified talent into the market? Maybe Miho, you can start.
Sure. So I think it's crucial to reach out to different types of next generation cybersecurity professionals or potential cybersecurity professionals. What I mean is you need to reach out to students from elementary schools to universities and graduate schools, but you also have to reach out to meet career cybersecurity professionals, and also to try reach out to C-suites, because C-suites are decision makers on how to allocate the budget on cybersecurity and IT and et cetera. And I'd like to share what's happening in Japan to educate and train and hire and also retain cybersecurity professionals. So back in 2015, several Japanese major critical infrastructure companies launched the cross-sector forum and in collaboration in academia and the government to define what cybersecurity professional means and what kind of cybersecurity missions are needed to fulfill the good security for Japan and also for the industry. Because if you don't have a good definition and if you don't have a common language to speak with, then you never know you are talking about a help desk or you are talking about C-suite. So that's why then that's the first step that the Japanese cross-sector forum did. And over the last 5 years, now the Japanese cross-sector forum members have been able to develop a common language adapting the NIST cybersecurity framework and also NICE cybersecurity framework, and also using the common language to define what kind of cybersecurity professionals are needed to fulfill the cybersecurity missions to protect the critical infrastructure in Japan. And also because it also covers different subsidiaries of the Japanese companies around the world. So that way, if you have a common language, then you can reach out to different sectors and different companies, different government in different countries, because now you have something in common, but you can also bring in different skill sets and talents and background into one big global team to work together.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, you're right. It starts with defining, you know, what are the type of roles that we need in the future? And Magda, are there any thoughts on, you know, what are the type of mission critical cybersecurity positions that you think would play a critical role in bridging the talent gap? And also, what are your thoughts in general on how we can bridge the shortage?
So first of all, I would like to continue on that very relevant and extremely important point, common lexicology. I mean, if everyone talks about cybersecurity in a different language, then we are based our numbers on random numbers that are not very significant and realistic. And it's true, we have seen online debates about are these numbers real, because there are so many positions, but at the same time, we see CISOs and other cybersecurity professionals struggling to find jobs. So what's the reality and what's the real, like the cause, the root cause problem? And I think here, one of the most important points is the lack of lexicology that Miho said, but as well, the point that, you know, when you look at some of the job descriptions in cybersecurity, it's like looking for a Superman or a Superwoman from incident response to cybersecurity strategy, mitigation plans, and at the same time being on calls 24/7 and hacking all the same time, you know. So come on, we need to be realistic. So one, there is this lexicology, but two, it's actually ensuring that whoever is posting those job descriptions, and in particular, you know, HR, because sometimes HR posts those jobs, I think without even consulting with the security professionals, because perhaps they don't have yet anyone in that particular space. So they just try to find a way of posting this job without the right understanding. So one, they're not using the right lexicology. Two, it's demanding too much for one job, like, you know, hands-on strategy, et cetera, et cetera. And three, there is a full list of cybersecurity certification that goes from CEH, OSCP to CCISO. So again, let's come back to the realistic way of and ensuring that expectations can be met. So there is a way that we need to raise awareness for cyber, for the HR as well as part of the ecosystem, ensuring that whatever roles are published are actually able to be fulfilled. That's one. From the diversity perspective, I think also that it's a very good point, because cybersecurity is not an IT problem, it's a general problem, it's a business risk. And therefore, it does require different skill sets. It's not only about the cybersecurity expert who knows how to hack, it's also about the cyber strategist who knows the business risks and can ensure that the business understand the technological and cyber risks. So it's different requirements, different perspective, but as well, which I really liked after my visit to Australia, Shaman, is actually where they had a discussion about bringing psychologists, bringing people from completely different industries, making the cybersecurity domain a very different domain from that sense that it's shifting. It's not anymore IT related. It never should have been in the first place. But this is the maturity that needs to increase over the time. And that brings me to your point, Stephen, where you're asking what are the most common, you know, demand that I'm seeing in Asia, maybe in Asia Pacific. From what I read in a research paper, in Singapore only, over the next 3 years, we will have 3,000 positions that will not have the right security skill set. And one of the main domains that were flagged was incident response. So companies, again, do not take a lot of times the proactive approach, but they have the, you know, reactive approach. So they want someone who actually will be there monitoring, okay, an incident, let me fix it. And this is something that will come up. So I think, again, from the aspect of the talent in cybersecurity, we need to ensure that we are moving into the same maturity level. We are having companies with no security teams at all, no security maturity, that are starting recruiting. However, that recruitment doesn't mean success in their cybersecurity approach or strategy because of a lack of awareness. So instead of bringing, you know, the general information only to cybersecurity professionals, we should as well perhaps target awareness for HR and how to build a proper job description or how to start your recruitment into cybersecurity. So then the gap or the numbers that we see, they are actually relevant as well and put in a realistic box, because at the end they are representing something, a box that, okay, the cybersecurity profession should fill those gaps. But those gaps are actually perhaps not realistic as well. So yeah, that's my point of view. Shaman, you're on mute.
Thanks. Now, I think that I couldn't agree more, Magda, because even as you were sharing all these points, like even our listeners are all just commenting and I hear them saying, oh, they totally agree with you. It is really true. Like, this is the things that we are seeing in the industry. And, you know, even sometimes hiring managers are just focusing on like the number. Someone was mentioning focusing on the number of years of experience, and they are so fixated on that. And maybe HR is using that to really, you know, blindly make sure there's a tick in the box and stuff like that. But we can't, as you mentioned, we can't put people in a box. And especially in this industry, we have to be extremely diverse in the way we think. When we look at their backgrounds, you know, they're like from wherever they come from, we have to be very open. So a lot of fantastic points here. And I'm just conscious of time because we still have a few more questions we want to get through. So what we'll do is we will, to the listeners, I know you, a lot of questions are still coming in. We will just have to finish off with two questions. So Magda and Miho, we can try to like I'll keep it short and sweet. We will extend it a little bit longer for our listeners. But some of the questions have come in is also like, you know, going on to cybersecurity not being a technology problem, not just a tech problem, process problem, but it's heavily, you know, affected by the people, right, as part of the bigger equation. So there's a lot of discussion we talk about now, you know, us, everyone moving into remote working from home as well, and then the human factors involved, like, can you all share some advice on maybe how companies or even what the government can be doing to equip people to in terms of raising the right level of awareness, even when it comes to our remote workforce? Maybe some quick tips that you can share with us.
I really recommend that some of the governments in the world and already are taking up steps to raise awareness for cybersecurity for remote workers. For instance, the Cybersecurity Agency of Singapore have already issued an advisory for remote workers. And also the Japanese Metropolitan Police Agency has issued the advisory, not only in text, but also in video. So to make it more relevant and understandable for non-cybersecurity professionals. So I think the key to include in those cybersecurity advisory for the first time remote workers is to make it really, really at basic level. So like keep it really short and succinct, and then keep only like 3 to 5 basic steps for instance, strong passwords and what kind of phishing emails you should watch out, something like that. And it's also important to include examples of phishing emails or fake apps that you should avoid to download.
Thanks for that, Miho. Anything else to add, Magda?
Yes, Shaman, I would like to add a practical tip for the ones who do not have a cybersecurity budget, you know, and they went into remote with bring your own device and they cannot enforce GPOs, etc. So what I did advise, like have a poll or a checklist that you actually send to the employees. They need to check it and sign on it. That pretty much enforces is at least a certain level of security in place. And checklists are available. So you can build a poll and then, you know, every employee needs to check those things and, you know, agree on it. Of course, if we're talking about 60,000 people company, bring your own device, that might be difficult. But I think in that particular case, probably the company has a more mature, I hope, approach and they have company monitor, company managed laptops. But if you are a smaller company across 600 or even 1,000 employees working on their own devices, try to do it. For me, I have seen some really good wins here. And by just doing signed, not just a checklist, signed checklist, which actually brings the accountability and liability to the employees to follow them.
Excellent. All right, we're going to end off and close off with, given it's the Privacy Awareness Week, any quick privacy or security tips that you can share with our listeners?
I think that privacy and cybersecurity are the two sides of the same coin, and I think that the combination and the balance between the two is getting even more crucial for remote workers. Because now we rely so much on digital technology. For example, this webinar is a great example, right? Because everybody is sitting in their home from different countries like Singapore, Japan, Australia, and everyone is being connected. But if we don't feel it's secure, then people will be hesitant to use this technology. And another example is what we already talked about is COVID-19 contact tracing app, because that raised some concerns over privacy. So I think that now people really need to keep the balance between the privacy and cybersecurity in mind to try to help remote workers and also everybody in the world.
Magda?
Yeah, and Shaman, I would actually add to that saying that sometimes I have seen in companies, and pretty often, a complete, I would say, separation between privacy and security. While they should work really closely together, but privacy is not just a compliance checkbox. Again, we're not anymore in traditional physical world, so your data that needs to be compliant with privacy laws is flowing around technology, and it starts with having very good visibility. Where's the data? So again, cybersecurity and privacy, one is in helping the other, and especially cybersecurity can enable and help with privacy compliance.
Love that. And I see that there are still questions coming from our listeners, but we ran out of time because we want to make it short and concise. But you know what? The conversations can still be, you know, kept going on. We will be posting on LinkedIn. So the rest of you, feel free, you know how to reach Magda and Miho as well. Feel free to add to the comments on the post once it goes up, and then we can keep the conversation going. And they will be more than happy to, you know, share their insights and continue on that. All right. With that, just if you can stay with us for a minute or so. So if you can see on the screens, we have our couple of episodes. The fourth one will be going up soon on YouTube. And I also want to just give a, so that's our YouTube channel, Cyber Risk Meetup. So just want to give a quick shout out to Mimecast, who have always been a really our annual community supporter and sponsor, actually. So really big thank you to them so that we can keep doing what we do. This is all just voluntary. This is all not a part of work or anything like that, but it's just giving back to the community. Also a big thank you to My Security Marketplace and PrivaSec for being our community partners. Again, if any questions about actually My Security Marketplace is a great forum for lots of content, articles, articles, magazine news, and things like that, podcasts even. So Few Privacy really is the company I work for, and we have been actually very busy with a lot of, we talk about remote working from home, right? We've been busy doing a lot of security assessments for organizations, doing, you know, pen testing, doing security awareness and things like that. So any questions, you can also check, reach out to me directly. And, that's a personal program that I'm running for those who are aspiring to be a next gen leader when it comes to improving your communication craft. Or even, you know, like, yeah, all the program, actually, I have some courses that I have, I'm running and running some workshops as well. I've put that on the link, so feel free to check that out. And Steve, maybe you want to give them a quick run through about this special initiative that you're running for the Cyber Risk Meetup chapter in Tokyo.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks, Charmaine. So the 2020 Cyber Riskers Mentoring Program in Tokyo, I mean, the inspiration for me came from some conversations that I've been having with people in the cybersecurity market. One of the things I've noticed is that many people generally don't have a clear idea of, you know, how do I get into cybersecurity? Or they may work in some small teams where there's about 3 to 5 cybersecurity professionals, but they want to see different sides of cybersecurity. They want to see, well, you know, I'm working in a small team now, but what does it look like from a consulting side? What does it look like going to a vendor? And getting experience there. So what I thought would be a great idea, and this is something that I've personally benefited from by having a mentor in my own career, is just having someone there that you can ask questions about, you know, what, you know, you could ask these industry leaders about, well, what are the things, you know, if you were to start in my shoes today, what would you do in your career to get to be a CISO? Or what wouldn't you do? What are some bad advice you've seen in the career that I should stay away from? So I thought I'd open it up to people in Tokyo. Applications close soon, so please do apply. And the other thing I wanted to do is encourage other people around the globe, for those of you tuning in, to perhaps thinking about starting a similar sort of initiative. And if you do need some support, please feel free to reach out to myself or Charmaine, and we'll be happy to share how we launched this program and got it off the ground. So thank you very much.
Excellent. Thanks, Steve. And I really just want to give a big shout out now to Miho and Magda for giving us their time, their precious time. I mean, they are so active in the industry. They are so busy doing a lot of things, but they are a perfect example of leading from the front and being a role model by, you know, even just giving back to the community by sharing all their insights. You guys are fantastic mentors, and I must say I'm really proud to see, like, there's such a big, you know, great diversity representation represented here actually in this APEC edition. So I'm so happy to have you guys here, and just a big thank you once again for all your time and even for what you've shared with our listeners today.
Thank you. Thank you as well, Shaman.
No worries. Thank you, guys. So that's pretty much all we have for you today. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And stay tuned, actually, for the next few episodes. We'll keep doing this. If you guys want it, just let us know. And thanks again to my co-host, Steve, and to our amazing speakers, Magda and Miho. Take care, everybody. Have a great rest of your week ahead. See you.
Yeah. See you.